It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Hi. Just wanted to let you know that my guest this week on Talk About Las Vegas, Diane Christensen, will also be my guest on my other YouTube channel, Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Because of Diane's background as a showgirl and her connection to Las Vegas, I thought it would be a good idea to feature her on both channels, first here and then on Thursday on Ira's Everything Bagel. Enjoy and thanks. Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. While the Cold War didn't make it into the 21st century, one other major phenomenon barely made it here, and that is the showgirl. And my guest may have the reason why. She's been in that world from a Midwest upbringing to the world of dance in Paris, Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, Montreal, New York City, and Las Vegas, and then a segue to becoming a top acting coach in Hollywood. And she's written a book about it all. Diane Christensen is author of The Last Real Showgirl, My Sequined 70s on Stage, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Diane, you can go to thelastrealshowgirl.com, and you can follow her on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook, and also the ChristensenActingAcademy.com, which we'll also talk a little bit about. Diane, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Ira. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I have a little bit of a background in the world that you inhabit, but you obviously were in it more, and you worked at what intrigued me when I was reading the book. You worked at both the original Parisian Lido, and then, of course, you worked in the Siegfried and Roy Las Vegas version as well. So I guess I should start with that as how you decided to go into the world of show business and particularly the world of showgirls.
Well, I don't think any little girl grows up in their dance studio and goes, I want to be a showgirl. But it happens. So I did have a goal starting at 13 years old to become a rockette. That was my goal. And I didn't actually start studying tap dancing until I was 13. So I hadn't been in dance class as a small child, like a lot of dancers. I started at 13 and I worked hard, really, really hard for 4 years. And when I was a senior, my mentor took me and one other girl who was ready to go meet Russell Marquette, the original creator of the Rockettes, and Emily Sherman at Radio City Music Hall. Now, Emily Sherman was a Rockette in the 40s and 50s, and she became the first choreographer and the company manager. So we actually got to audition for these two powerhouse individuals in the entertainment industry. So that was pretty intimidating at 17.
I would think so.
But we were ready. We were ready to go. So we went, we did our semi-private audition, and we were both accepted. That was the beginning. And I will say that if you're a Rockette, every other job comes to you. It's like the ultimate audition to pass.
I want to give you the 20th century phrase, the world is your oyster.
Absolutely. I mean, you couldn't say it more perfectly, because that is the way it was. Almost every other job after that, I never had to audition for, except for Jerry Jackson at the Tropicana. I did have to audition for Jerry, but he accepted me too. So that launched my dance career. And I went home, finished high school, and waited for that call to come from the Rockettes to be a summer replacement.
Well, when you look at the beginning of your career, and the title of the book, again, is The Last Real Showgirl, My Sequined 70s on Stage. What is the difference for those who are listening and watching? The difference between a showgirl and a quote-unquote dancer? Because there are differences.
There is a distinction, and that's a good question. A showgirl is someone who is topless in the shows. And the showgirls are presented individually in the biggest costumes, so they have to be very tall. And the ones that really need personality to entertain. So I would say the showgirls are a little bit more of the actors in the performances of the big spectaculars. The dancers are covered dancers, and I did both. And for me, and you probably read this in the book, Ira, mm-hmm. becoming a showgirl was not an easy thing for me. I was 18 when that happened, and I had a pulled hamstring from the can-can that I did in Montreal, and I really kind of had no choice. But what I found out ultimately as the story unfolded was that I was being prepared for a much larger show by my producer, Tibor Rudis, the Rudis Dancers, to go to the Bahamas with the taller girls, because he had hired a very short Japanese principal dancer for a new show in Montreal. And she was only 5'5". So he sent the taller girls to the Bahamas to his gigantic show, Casino de Paradis. And I worked there for 3 years. And I was a featured showgirl in that show. So it all turned out better than I could ever have imagined, but I fought it tooth and nail. I fought every inch of the way. So I was not, it was not easy for me. However, I came to love what I did very much, and I made more money.
Now, how did you make your way to Las Vegas?
Argue with that.
Yeah. How did you make your way to Las Vegas?
How did I get to Las Vegas?
Right.
Well, after I worked in the Bahamas, I actually moved to Washington, D.C. to take up a career and a romance in stand-up comedy. And I stayed there for 6 months. And things didn't go my way. I was only 19, still learning about the world and love and romance and careers and trying to make them all work at once. And I went to Las Vegas with one of my dear friends who lived there, who I had worked with in Montreal, an Australian gal, who said they are hiring for a new show. Now, Tibor Rudis, who I worked for in Montreal and the Bahamas, had a third of that show. And he provided dancers and acrobats and showgirls. And his choreographer was the assistant to Jerry Jackson, the choreographer of the Tropicana Follies Bergère. So I did go to Las Vegas and audition for Jerry and Tibor Rudis, and they accepted me to be a swing girl for the nudes. So that was a challenge. And I think I was ready for that challenge at that time.
When you say swing girl, I know what that means, but explain to our audience who may not know the technical term.
Yeah, a swing girl or a swing boy in a show is someone who learns, for example, there were 10 showgirls in the show. I would learn all 10 parts, depending on who was ready to go on vacation or take a week off or take a month off. And I would fill in for whoever was taking a vacation. Shows need a swing boy and a swing girl for each segment of the show. So I was a showgirl for I was a swing girl for the showgirls. They had a swing for the covered dancers, a swing for the boy dancers, and someone who would swing for the principals so they could have nights off. We all got a night off in Las Vegas, which was a treat compared to what I would have had at Radio City. And even in Paris at the Lido, I worked 7 nights a week, and we did 2 different shows a night and 3 on Saturday.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So that's a lot. And I was the swing nude. They called them dancing nudes, the showgirls then. I was the swing in Paris as well. So
quite an active resume. And I there's so much to discuss, and we only have 30 minutes, but who gave you the idea for the title of The Last Real Showgirl? How did that come about?
I did that myself.
Very good.
I was at the Stardust reunion for the cast and crew in 2006, just before they imploded the Stardust. And 650 people attended. 5 decades of performers from the big spectaculars attended that. And I remember sitting around looking at all these beautiful people from all these different eras, all these different ages, and thinking, wow, this is the swan song. This is the end of an era. And I want to write about it. I didn't consider myself a writer, but I thought, I'm just going to start writing the stories. Because it's something that I believe is iconic. It's coming to an end, and it actually didn't fully end until 2024 when the Jubilee show closed. Oh, was that 2014?
Forget the date offhand because
2014 Jubilee closed. Oh yeah, it was the Lido in Paris that closed in 2024. There are still a few shows in Paris that have showgirls and dancers, and that's the Moulin Rouge and the Crazy Horse Saloon. They still exist.
Do you think there's ever a chance, though, that somewhere down the line, I know we're in, as I did in my opening, implied the diminishing returns of the showgirl, unfortunately. But do you think there's at some point, of a show that could come back to one of the hotels on the Strip, which would feature showgirls?
You know, people have brought back showgirls in different forms. I've seen the Awakening show twice at the Wynn, and they have some beautiful showgirls, but they're not topless. And if you go over to, you'll have to help me. It's Las Vegas, the show. It's a lounge show. I think it's Planet Hollywood. Does that make sense?
Could be, yes.
I believe it. Yeah, I've seen that a few times too. And they do go through each era. That's what the show is about. So they go through, and it's a great lounge show, by the way. So when you go through the 50s, the 60s and 70s, I think showgirls came into being with Miss Bluebell in the late 60s. That's when she decided to have girls appear topless. So they go through each era. They even have a comedy segue in the show with a Siegfried and Roy impersonator, which was really fun. So that was our era, the 70s. They do have them. So you can see showgirls sort of in a lounge show. You can go to see Dita Von Teese at the Venetian, and she has the Jubilee costumes that she's rented. And they have showgirls and showboys. So you can go to a few places in Vegas still if you want to see a showgirl. But
you don't think you don't think the era of the major production show with all of the showgirls in them could be mounted these days?
No.
No.
I think that times have changed. And I think that women in general, are not going to be topless. It was an objectified time. Women were objectified during those times, and that's changed a lot.
And yet, even though they were objectified, as you write in your book, this is a close family, quote unquote, meaning that that community, that would be a better term, that community is very close-knit and become friends for life.
For life. It's true. All my best friends are from that time. We are holding a new showgirl reunion and book launch on May 18th at the Copa Room. And I'm sure we're going to draw lots of people from our community to join together again. Those of us that are still here, that's a reality too.
Yes, that's true. Time marches on.
Yes. We've lost a lot of them. But, you know, those reunions, every time I go to Vegas, I'm in Los Angeles. Every time I go to Vegas, we have a showgirl luncheon and 10, 20 people come. And the boys come too that are around. So we still get together. We still have our little, you know, luncheons and dinners and reunions and cruises. The showgirls really are a community and a wonderful community. It's amazing how dedicated the community is to one another still. And I think that was more of an intimate setting to work in than most.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if it's just because we bonded because we were together so much. We worked hard. We disciplined, trained dancers, worked very hard. I mean, just thinking about two shows a night at the Stardust, three on Saturday with Siegfried and Roy, sold out every night. That was before Siegfried and Roy went over to the Riviera, and then they went over to the
Bellagio. Mirage. The Mirage.
The Mirage. And they owned a third of that show, and they built that hotel to accommodate their animals. I don't think that's existed anymore. They have the volcano. They had their animals there on display. Prior to that, when I worked with Siegfried and Roy, they would give weekly tours to elementary schools at their ranch for children to visit their animals and see their animals like a zoo.
Just for the record, too, many people may not know this that are are listening or watching is that the county has designated that their home as a historical site. So it's going to be
absolutely
protected as well. When you were writing the book, did you feel the need to even do research because you live so much of it? So how much was research in a way part of that process?
I fact checked everything and then my publisher did as well. So we were a team. And it takes a team to have a book published these days. It's not an easy task. I self-published a book years ago because I have an acting studio. I published a scene book for teenagers written by Hollywood teenagers. And I bought all of them, self-published the book, easy peasy. But I'll tell you, working and finding a publisher, finding a literary agent is not an easy task. There are so many requirements these days for getting published that it took me 2 years after the book was finished and then multiple edits afterwards until the release, which was just last week.
It's so amazing how that works. And what you do, I mentioned in the opening that you're a very well-known acting coach. In Hollywood, do you think it'd be easier for you to find a publisher and to deal with a literary agent, et cetera, just because of your position?
It was. I know other friends who've been published and who wound up self-publishing because they couldn't find a literary manager. Yes. The answer to that is yes. I work with the manager that signed me. I've worked with them. They're in New York and LA. BAM Management, wonderful company. I've worked with them for over 16 years. They've come to our showcases. They've signed actors. And I actually had trained their literary manager's daughter for several years as an actress. And I didn't even realize that she was the literary manager at BAM. But they did sign me and they loved the book. And thank goodness, you know, it really takes a team. And within the first month of her pitching, well, she put me through my paces. You know, she had me get 7 beta readers and do all the things that you have to do to be published. But the first month that she pitched the book, we had 2 offers. So that was pretty exciting. And we went with the one that we felt really believed in the book, really believed in it. And of course there were several more edits and drafts before it actually came out. But I really love working with McFarland. Really love it.
You know that you're going to do well with the book because just in the community of showgirls and former showgirls, that alone will be X number of people buying the book and reading it.
And they are. And the fact that the title coincides with the recent movie, The Last Showgirl, which was intimidating at first and confronting, but I realized, my manager said to me, well, you're the real one. And there's nothing wrong with traction. And there has been traction and there have been inquiries. And the similarity was really sort of, I was upset at first, but then I thought, it doesn't matter. And my book came out for pre-order 2 days before the trailers for the film came out.
It worked out.
So that was very satisfying for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, also too, you're writing about your life and career as opposed to a movie, which is a totally different situation.
Fictitious.
Exactly. What were some of the lessons you learned from going through that process of becoming a dancer and then a showgirl, which is a dancer as well, but going through that process and going to these different locations and working in these various shows? And as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't just Las Vegas, it was New York City, the Bahamas, et cetera. Were there some lessons that stuck with you for life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say to anyone embarking on a career, and you know, it's funny because when I was in Vegas before I auditioned for Jerry Jackson, I was going to dance classes every week and I would see the most phenomenal dancers in these classes and they were complaining about not being able to find a job. And I felt so fortunate. So it really is, you know, stick with the people who have resources like your teachers. I know actors come to me because they know that I have the A-list coming to our showcases all the time. As a coach, we're known. That's sort of our signature thing.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about your acting academy in a few minutes.
But
that's a good lesson to know. Stick with the people.
It is know people with resources and study with them and train with them. I knew when I met my mentors at 13, that was my ticket out of town. So I was resourceful. You have to have determination. You've got to be resourceful. You've got to do your research. And you can do all of that and still find that those are not the people that are dedicated to you. You have to have a team around you. This is not a Lone Ranger industry. This is a team player industry. And I think that you have to embrace that, whatever aspect of art you pursue. So I think really finding your team, keeping yourself surrounded by people who are like-minded, who love you and love what you do and care about getting you to your goals is the most important piece of advice I can give. And I was very fortunate to align myself with those people at a very young age. That was my best move, I really think.
Is timing everything, as they like to say, in terms of those kinds of jobs?
Yes. I couldn't have gotten the jobs that I got after I auditioned for the Rockettes if people didn't need people in a show. If a producer had three shows like the Rudas Dancers did in Montreal, the Bahamas, and Las Vegas, there wouldn't have been as many jobs for me. So when somebody calls you up and said, "Oh, we're looking for people. Oh, Miss Bluebell in Paris is looking for people," I flew to Paris, hired on a photograph and a recommendation and a resume by Miss Bluebell. And my best friend was the principal dancer in that show, and she called. She said, "Come to Paris, Miss Bluebell's hiring." And at the time, I was working as a Playboy bunny in Atlanta for 3 months. So I was just doing that to fill in between jobs and deciding what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. And I was there because of a romance.
For our audience,
So,
can you explain who Miss Bluebell is?
Miss Bluebell, Margaret Kelly, is the woman who originated the dancers for the Lido de Paris. She had troops of dancers that traveled worldwide on tour in Europe. She was originally a dancer herself at the Folies Bergère in Paris back in the 50s, and she created her own troupe, I think, actually in 47. So she was a dancer at the Folies Bergère in the 40s in Paris. So Margaret Kelly, Miss Bluebell, she became known as Madame Bluebell, was a danseuse. She was the ballet mistress, leading ballet mistress in the world, and she teamed up with Don Arden, great producer, choreographer of the spectaculars that you remember, the Tropicana, I
Dude.
mean the all the stars at the start, all the shows at the Stardust,
The Dude,
Bally's,
too, I believe.
MGM, the Dune. No, that was Frederick Apcar.
You're right. I am wrong.
Yeah,
Yes,
Frederick
right.
Apcar did the
But
Dunes.
yeah, these are names that have been part of the marquee on the strip
Oh
for
yeah, you've
decades.
seen them for years. You were there at the same time.
Yeah. So.
So Miss Bluebell teamed up with Don Arden, and that is when the most incredible shows emerged. He did Jubilee, which was the last show on the Strip, the last big spectacular, and he did Ali Lido at the Stardust. So Don Arden and Miss Bluebell were the leaders in the spectaculars. The most expensive costumes, he had Bob Mackie and Pete Menefee costumes and Falco from Paris. So they were the ones to be in, I think. Back in the early 70s, I believe that the Tropicana had the most beautiful show. But over the years, I came to realize that the best quality shows, the best choreography, the best staging, the best music, the best headliners, and the best dancers were in the shows with Miss Bluebell and Don Arden.
They had that touch.
Oh, did they? Oh, did they?
How did you?
And you can still find those videos on Facebook, on YouTube. You can
YouTube.
still find the opening of the Lido, Ali Lido show or the Jubilee show. And they're fun to watch. People are fascinated by them
Sure, it's a
because they're so cool.
point in time too.
Yeah. They're iconic.
Yeah, they're iconic. When you started so young, how did you keep from becoming cynical? Show business is a tough business, no matter what. So you're in a, and you're starting very young in life in that business. You don't seem to be, or don't appear to be, cynical even now. So how did you navigate those
Well,
waters?
I love show business. I love performers. I think that you become so focused on the work as an artist that you want to be good, you want to be the best, you want to move up. People in those shows, I mean, some people are very content just to be in one role and stay in one show for a long time, but that's not the norm. Most of those people are so accomplished and so well-trained, and that coupled with ambition makes people very focused. And ours was not a very competitive business, even though in the outer world it would seem so. It was a very dedicated business. So when you wind up in a show with people that are all talented and all accomplished and all well-trained, the focus becomes on the best artist we can be. And I think that when you are deep in your art and being well paid to do it, you're a happy person. And I also met a lot of positive people in our industry. There are a lot of beautiful people. There's a lot of spiritual people. For me, I learned about staying grateful. And I really believe that I learned that when I would go to dance classes and hear all these incredible dancers complaining about not being able to get a job. And it's probably the fact that they were complaining that kept them from getting a job. So I believe that the most positive people were hired.
So it sorts itself out. It sorts itself out. Yeah.
Yes. And people like Miss Bluebell and Don Arden know who they're hiring. They know. They have intuition. They have instincts. They know. And when you do have someone who's a negative, the line captains weed them out. Nobody wants to be in that atmosphere. And it's absolutely the same for actors on set or on stage. And I train my actors, you be the greatest person you can be to work with. You be generous to others, you be supportive, you be a team player, and you will be hired over and over by the same pretty people.
And we should mention that's a Christensen Acting Academy, which you can go to ChristensenActingAcademy.com. And you've been at that for how long?
33 years now.
Amazing. Amazing. And you had time to write the book, which is also pretty amazing.
Well, you know, the last 14 years, my daughter has joined me in the business, and she's an actress, dancer, and model herself, but now a young mother. She's a young wife and mother now. She gave up her acting career a few years ago and then became a mom, and she said to me, Mom, you know, I've been on set since I was a year and a half old, and I'm kind of over it. I'm kind of tired of it. I find teaching and giving back and passing the baton much more fulfilling right now. She goes, I'm not happy on set anymore. And she had just starred in two movies that were written for her. So for her to come full circle like that in her career as a young performer, I never expected my daughter to join me in business, but she's the most wonderful instructor, mentor to young people. She's turned out many more children's stars than I have. So her dedication now is she takes on the larger role in the studio, and she teaches more classes than I do.
Well, so that's good to know for people.
Yeah. I don't have to work as hard.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Before I let you go, what do you want people to take away from reading your book? Again, it's called The Last Real Showgirl by Sequined 70s on Stage.
Thank you, Ira. I would like people to know what it was really like to have those jobs and to live that life, and that we were real people who were dedicated, who made sacrifices, who made dancing a priority over and over again to have those coveted jobs and to look at what that iconic era was like.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Diane Christensen. She's author of The Last Real Showgirl by Sequined 70s on Stage. It's available on Amazon, Barnes Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Diane, go to lastrealshowgirl.com. You can follow her on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, the ChristensenActingAcademy.com as well. Diane, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Ira. It's really great meeting you.
Thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Be Las Vegas. Anything you want us to be.